Today, I believe, should be about a new beginning for Libya, a future in which the people of Libya can determine their own destiny, free from violence and free from oppression.
British Prime Minister David Cameron opening an international conference today on efforts to oust Muammar Gaddafi, who isn't cooperating. Gaddafi's tanks stopped an opposition assault on his hometown of Sirte. Fleeing rebel fighters were heard crying out, "Sarkozy, where are you?" referring to the French president, who's the strongest backer of airstrikes, and today called for airstrikes targeting Libyan politicians. Also today, Italy's foreign minister said several countries were behind a plan to end the conflict quickly, exile Muammar Gaddafi, and set up talks between tribal and opposition leaders. David Kirkpatrick of the New York Times is in Tripoli. David, first, what's your sense of what it means that rebels have been beaten back in their assault on Tripoli?
Just that. You know, the airstrikes at the moment appear to have brought us back to a standoff we had a few weeks ago. It sounds last night from President Obama's speech like he does not intend for NATO airstrikes to pave the way for a rebel advance all the way through Sirte or to Tripoli. It also doesn't look like the rebels have the firepower on their own, absent significant air support. The Gaddafi army is kind of between a dictator and a hard place, and I think Colonel Gaddafi will encourage them to push on towards Benghazi and the rebel front. I think the Western airstrikes will rebuff them whenever they try to advance in that direction. And that looks like where we are for the foreseeable future. I'm in Tripoli, and we initially wondered, will Tripoli rise up? Will you see protesters taking to the streets, blockading the streets, attacking and burning down police stations? That doesn't appear to be the case. Many of the people who led those protests have been locked up or warned that if they demonstrate again, they'll never see their families again. So the capital appears to be pretty firmly under Gaddafi's grip. So what I'm getting at here is that of the many scenarios we were looking at a few days ago, we're left really with one or two. You know, either the Allies get tired of their no-fly, no-drive zone protecting the rebels, or the military finds itself under increasing pressure from Gaddafi on one side and from the Western powers on the other. And I can only imagine the Western powers are hoping that the military turns against Gaddafi.
Well, we understand that the Western powers are doing more than just the pressure of the airstrikes, that there's actually been some sort of back-channel communication, you know, trying to get the military to flip.
I'm sure they're doing everything they can to try to get the military to flip. But this military is no ordinary military. What we saw almost immediately from the outbreaking of the unrest here is it shattered along roughly tribal lines. Colonel Gaddafi is very dependent on a handful of tribes for the personnel that form his elite military units. In Libya, when we speak of the military flipping, we're speaking of these tribes flipping. We're talking about the Kadhafa, his own tribe, which dominates the Air Force, the Warfala, which is a major tribe here in the West and in the armed services, and the Magaha that plays a big role in the armed services. And so I think you're probably seeing some interesting conversations at the moment among the leadership of those three tribes, as well as among their many members in the armed services. But right now, we don't see any evidence that their support is cracking. My colleagues in the East tell me that the Gaddafi armed forces are hammering very effectively at the rebel front line.
Well, let's just check in one other of those rebel strongholds. Between Sirte and where you are in Tripoli is Misrata, and the U.S. Navy is reporting that two of its aircraft and a guided missile destroyer attacked a bunch of Libyan Coast Guard vessels that were firing at merchant ships in the port there in Misrata. What's the significance of that fighting?
Had a chance to visit that city. The Gaddafi government brought a number of us there, promising us that it had been, quote-unquote, liberated. That was not the case. We saw a little corner of the town where a handful of very nervous, more than a handful really, a group of very, very nervous Gaddafi soldiers were perched on the roofs and established a little bit of a position surrounded by gunfire. We could hear rebel gunfire just a block or two away, and they quickly hustled us out of there. Rebels inside Misrata say that for some time now they've been trying to get boats to come in to help take care of some of their wounded. They would like Doctors Without Borders to be able to dock. They were hoping they would dock on Sunday, and they haven't had a chance to yet because of a Gaddafi blockade. And so my guess is that what the Navy is doing is removing the Gaddafi blockade around the Misrata port, and that will allow Western nations and other friendly powers to take out the wounded, perhaps to bring in fuel, water, and other supplies and help the people there withstand the siege by the Gaddafi forces around them.
Well, and we understand that there was a deal that people were trying to make that would mean Gaddafi leaving. But we hear from the BBC's John Simpson in Tripoli that he spoke to someone close to Gaddafi. Gaddafi's not going anywhere. And critics of President Obama say, you know, why should Gaddafi go? Because he clearly heard in the speech last night that the U.S. at least has no intentions of coming in and unseating him. What, by the way, was the reaction where you are in Tripoli to that speech?
I haven't heard much reaction. But as far as Gaddafi leaving, whereas in the West we might imagine a leader and his family hopping on a plane and taking off, here it's sort of not really that conceivable for him to rip himself and his nuclear family out of the fabric of the state because his larger clan is so interwoven. It's never been that plausible to me that he would make the kind of decision that President Ben Ali in Tunisia made to just hit the road one afternoon.
Right. Well, David Kirkpatrick, one last question. You've been doing some terrific writing. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time today. And we want to use a little bit of it to ask about the Libyan woman who burst into that hotel over the weekend where you and other foreign correspondents are being housed by the Gaddafi government. You were there. We spoke yesterday with another reporter who was there when she was shouting and screaming about how she'd been raped, when you all realized that the waiters and the people working in the hotel were actually, many of them, working also for the Gaddafi government. They hustled her off. The government says that she was released later. What is true? What do we know what's happened to her?
I would say that the truth is we don't know where she is. We continue to ask for a chance to speak to her, for at least some of our female colleagues to have a chance to speak to her. It's an awkward situation. I mean, obviously, our job is to be reporters, not lawyers or human rights activists, and we should be concerned about all of the Libyan people. And yet, this woman made it into our hotel and appeared to try to seek sanctuary with us. She specifically sought out Reuters and the New York Times. And so, inevitably, I think we feel some sort of an emotional connection to her. And it's we're powerless, really, to do anything about it.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing. I mean, here you are being handled in Tripoli by the very people who may be her captors. And there's nothing you can do about it. Yeah. David Kirkpatrick of the New York Times in Tripoli, speaking, by the way, of Imam al-Obeidi, the Libyan woman who burst into the hotel where the foreign journalists were housed this past weekend and has not been seen. David, thanks so much.